beyond good, beyond evil, beyond your wildest imagination.
Hello and welcome to Tooncast Beyond. Yes, that's right. It has been 1 year or so since Tooncast Beyond had our DreamWorks wrap-up in episode 57. Ladies and gentlemen, I am TFG and Mike. I am one of your hosts. And I gotta say, DreamWorks, Katzenberg nearly fucking killed me. Those movies, like, by the time we got to the DreamWorks wrap-up, I never wanted to do this podcast ever again because of DreamWorks films. The animation films, anyway. Joining me is TV's Mr. Neil. Hello.
Hello. Bibbidi boppity boo.
Yes. And what we are doing here is a 12-episode spotlight on animation, specifically directors. I was thinking more of the spotlight is going to be called Animation Direction. It's going to be Neil and I basically talking about various animation directors over the last, since the 1930s at least. So the last, 7 or 8 decades, et cetera, et cetera. And this is going to be kind of Tooncast's return a little bit. We're not yet ready to go to season 3. I'm not really sure what season 3 is going to be. I kind of have this idea in the back of my mind to turn the show into a grab bag kind of thing where one episode will be this, one episode will be that, and you never know what you're going to get. Basically pull a Forrest Gump on you people. I'm not sure. Yes, box of chocolates. That's right. I'm not sure because, like I said, the DreamWorks spotlight really, like, took a lot out of me, and it's taken me a year to kind of get my wits about me to come back to this podcast to do more cartoon discussions for you guys. So I think if I do season 3 is kind of like a, grab bag kind of thing. We could do a couple Disney films. We could do a couple of, other cartoons. I know people are dying to have us do Gargoyles. I know people have been dying to have me do Gargoyles since Tooncast Classic. We'll get to it. I was actually going to do it about 3 months ago because someone somewhere in the universe uploaded all of season 1 of Gargoyles onto YouTube, and now it's gone.
Oh, yeah,
I know, right? So as I said, this is going to be the Animation Direction Spotlight. We are going to be doing 12 episodes. I don't know if Neil and I are going to have a third co-host at all. It's probably just going to be us. Let me see here. What are your kind of thoughts about doing this whole spotlight thing?
My thoughts?
Yes.
I didn't really think it's gonna be a spotlight about directors, I guess. I don't know.
All right, so like I said, 12 episodes. The first one, obviously, today is gonna be Walt Disney. Later, after that is Bob Clampett, Tex Avery, Frizz Freleng, Robert McKimson, which I actually will probably be talking more on that episode than Neil will, because of Cartoon Network, they show a lot of McKimson's cartoons on the Looney Tunes hours. So, Bill Melendez, the Fleischers, David DePatie, and then Neil, you're going to kind of take over with lesser known Golden Age directors with Wilfred Jackson, Burt, and Burt Gillette. We'll do Oob Works, how do you say his name?
I think it's Ub Iwerks.
Ub Iwerks. Okay, there you go.
Weird name.
The final two episodes will be, obviously, William. One episode will be William Hanna and Joseph Barbera. And the final episode will be the master of Scott. The back and forth. The master of back and forth, duck season, rabbit season, Mr. Chuck Jones. So, like I said, in this one, it's going to be all about Walt Disney. What was the first Disney movie you ever saw? Do you remember?
Well, I'm going to disqualify everything after Jungle Book, so I'll just go right for Pinocchio.
Wow, seriously? Yeah. You're going to disqualify everything after... Why?
Because he died during the Jungle Book, so it's kind of hard to credit him for stuff okay. after his death.
Okay, that's true. That's true. I don't have the filmography in front of me. Was Robin Hood before or after?
I believe it was after, because Robin Hood has that kind of scratchy Xeroxy look, and I think all the cartoons that have that are after he died.
Mm. Yeah, that's probably the one I remember the most as a kid. I do remember Lady and the Tramp and Cinderella. What else? I mean, the guy really was... He's one of those creators that started something and then gave it to the people that he trusted and said, here, go do this. Mm-hmm.
And we're saying this because we kind of ran into a brick wall when we noticed that he really doesn't have much of a career as a director.
No, he doesn't. I mean, he has a wonderful career as a producer. According to IMDb, he has... 657 credits as a producer, which is really, really interesting. I mean, the way I look at it is he started it all. Sure, he wasn't directing, but I mean, he's kind of like, I really hate doing this, but he's kind of, but not really like George Lucas. Whereas I said a moment ago, he basically, you know, went ahead, created the studio, had all this stuff, and, you know, did a lot of stuff in the beginning, and then handed it off and said, here, you know, take this and make it good. And I'm sure he had a lot of say in the final product and everything else. What he created with Mickey Mouse and Silly Symphonies and all that, I mean, was just amazing, honestly.
Yeah, he was a visionary. I think the Lucas comparison might be more apt than a lot of people realize, because he wasn't exactly the most creative guy on the staff. I mean, he created Mickey Mouse and Oswald, and I guess he also sort of created Goofy, but it seems like everyone around him were the idea people, and he was just like the visionary. I mean, he's the son of a contractor. His father is one of the people who helped construct the 1893 Columbian Exposition, the World Fair. And if you've ever seen pictures of this thing, it was like, it's basically like the precursor to Disney World. It's this huge, huge monstrosity of a theme park that they built like right here in Chicago. And I think there's only two buildings left. One of them is the Museum of Science and Industry. And yeah, his father helped put that together. And yeah, like I said, it's kind of like what Disney World would have been. So it seemed like Walt got his business sense from his father and not so much creativity. I mean, he was a decent cartoonist, but I think he noticed that Ub Iwerks was better. So he was like, yeah, I'm going to do these silly symphonies and you're going to draw them. I'm just going to sit back over here and handle the money. And that's what he did.
Sit over here and handle the money. First thing that comes to mind, Scrooge McDuck. Not that he was that way, but that's the first thing.
Yeah, a lot of people compare Walt to Jim Henson, and I don't think so. Jim was much more hands-on.
Involved. Yeah. Right. He was much more involved. I do know, I always remember seeing this video somewhere where he explains the Seven Dwarfs.
Yeah.
I do remember that. I forget where I saw it. Not really sure, but I remember him, and I remember other people talking about how, you know, his foray into features was a huge gamble, adapting Snow White. And I know a lot of people put Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs on a pedestal. I personally don't. It's great animation, It's amazing animation for the, 1937, that's amazing for that era.
It's a great first step into the field of feature-length animation, I'll say that.
It is, as far as the actual animation, as far as the plot and the writing and all of that, that story is... It's funny because Disney, the corporation, Disney, has always had this family vibe to it. And if you look at that movie is so anti-family. It's probably the equivalent as to what a 1994 Jerry Springer Family Feud episode would be like. It really is.
Well, other than that, I mean, it was also kind of scary in places. I mean, the evil queen, when she starts mm-hmm. changing into the old hag, that was really that was hard to look at when I was a kid. And Pinocchio even more so. Pinocchio is just like a nightmare. But you know, that was kind of the way it was done back then. I mean, there were not like these ninnies that we have now, where cartoons have to be safe and appropriate for little 2-year-olds, and no one's allowed to be scared or offended.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, look how far Disney has come since 1937, since Snow White. I mean, they've really... The greatest thing about Disney is their animation, for the most part, kind of skewered more to the family-friendly, and like you were saying, you know, about the kids and everything else. And then they go off and create... I think it was them. They went off and did a sub-genre, sub-studio called Touchstone, where they were actually able to, Touchstone Pictures, where they're actually able to actually do more, not adult in the way that it sounds as I'm saying it, but more like, you know, films for adults, which is really cool. But, I mean, his the early works, the early films, they're good in their own ways, I guess. Pinocchio really freaked me out. I mean...
What do I look like, a jackass?
Pinocchio just really freaked me out. Now, I know back in Tooncast Classic, Optimus Solo and I did do a Disney spotlight, and we actually reviewed each one of the films. So I'm trying not to repeat a lot of what I said back then, which was a number of years ago. Yeah, I would say that probably after Snow White, the two... Pinocchio is... It freaked me out. And then Alice in Wonderland, I just didn't get. I guess you had to be stoned to understand that movie.
Yeah, as I understand it, that book was written by someone on an acid trip. Mm-hmm. And... yeah, it's very drug induced, and I guess you need some sort of enhancement to really get through that movie.
Yeah, I mean, I can get through it. I just don't get. I mean, as an adult, I can get through it, and it's fine. I notice all these things now that, you know, movies like Half Baked and you know, How High and all this and all that have come out since Alice in Wonderland. It's like, okay.
It's kind of a weird fit for the straight-laced Disney style, because Disney was very... His entire studio is based on being very stylized, whereas, like, the Warner Brothers gang, they were all, like, very abstract and weird, and they mm-hmm. would, like, experiment with colors, and which, you know, Disney did later on, but it was... You pretty much had very natural colors in Disney films. You didn't really go into the weird spectrum of colors and shit like that.
Yep. And of course he killed Bambi's mom. I'm sorry, Bambi's mom. I gotta find that clip. But Bambi's mom, God, so hilarious.
Something about early Disney films, it's like always like killing parents and
Yeah, like, you know, we say that Disney is supposed to have this family-friendly kind of vibe and, you know, be all wholesome and everything else, but a lot of the early Disney films were anything but wholesome movies.
It's almost like Dumbo was an apology for that. It was like the mother got to live at the end. Although someone's going to point out, oh, Dumbo was before this movie, that movie. Yeah, I'm probably wrong, so.
Right, right. I really love the old Disney shorts. Really where I got to see them, more so I'd say in the last 20 years or so, is when they had House of Mouse on Disney Channel.
Oh, yeah.
Which is basically the, you know, the club that, you know, Mickey and Minnie and Donald and Goofy and all of them kind of run, and they show the old classic tunes. I do remember as a kid, 1986, we went to Disney World. I hated every minute of it. I was 6 years old and I had to walk everywhere. I hated it.
Oh, that's why.
Yeah. And plus, the guy that
thought maybe the you guy had a bad time at like on like Space Mountain or the Talking Presidents or something.
No. I don't even think 86 was Space Mountain there. I don't even remember.
I don't know.
I honestly don't remember. I remember the bad time I did have was on, I believe it was at Epcot when Figment was still there at the time. The guy that owned Figment or controlled him or whatever else scared the crap out of me. And there was another time I went back and I thought it was really hilarious. I went in 86 when I was 6 years old. I went back in 95 when I was 15. And they had the Honey, We Shrunk the Audience thing. And it was this interactive ride where you had, you know, they did all these weird effects where they, you know, it seemed like they shrunk us. And at the end of it, the mouse or something, rat, whatever it is, runs under it. So they mimicked a rat running under it. It's like, oh, God. And at the end, the dog sneezes on us, so they spray water. Sprayed water at us. How much did he have influence putting Disneyland and Disney World together?
Ooh, I should have looked that up before the show started, because I think did he die before Disney World opened? There's something about that where he there's a picture of him doing a dedication speech. So it was like there was something about like the timeline of that where like the official opening of one of those parks he helped plan, but he died. Yeah, I really should have looked that up before the show started. Sorry, folks.
I'm just trying to find it here now. World opened in 71, so maybe he didn't.
Yeah, I think he was dead before that.
He died in 66.
Yeah.
Parks and resorts. Yeah, the first one opened in 1953. Retains a concert. Person Stanford. Let's see. Disneyland is dedicated by Walt Disney on July 17th and opens on July 18th. Disneyland 1955. So Disneyland came first.
Okay.
And then in 1955, and then Disney World happened in 71. So,
and his head is frozen at one of those.
Aww.
No, it's not.
Gee. You can only make that joke with Peter Cullen, because you know that's exactly what Michael Bay would want to do. Jerk. You know, like we said, he was an amazing visionary. I remember watching a lot of the old Disney cartoons as a kid and loving them. I see myself, and I know this is going to be bad, but honestly, as a kid, I saw myself even before, like, looking back on it now. I see myself as a child at, like, I am Roger Rabbit. It's like, the news! I was hoping for another Goofy cartoon. I used to love Goofy cartoons as a kid. Goofy was amazing. So many good memories.
Goofy was almost like their answer to Bob Clampett. It was like, let's be silly. Because Mickey was very straight-laced. Donald was, he was angry, and that made him funny, but he didn't really do much physical comedy. Well, he kind of did, but Goofy was definitely like the physical comedy character.
Yeah, he was. I love the ones, the shorts, where I think there's one where he goes to do sports, and I love the narrator for the Goofy cartoons. Because it might be, like, as a child, it might be the first narrator I had ever heard actually interact with the character. Mm-hmm. Now, I know that there was, later on, there was Thurl Ravenscroft that, was it Stupor Duck? I know he interacts with Daffy in that, but the narrator that did the Goofy cartoons, I remember loving that. That was so awesome. Who is your favorite core Disney character, like Mickey, Minnie, Donald, Goofy, the Chipmunks? Who's your favorite core Disney character?
I would probably go with either Goofy or Donald. Maybe Goofy. Just because he is like the... His are the cartoons I've seen the most. You know, mm-hmm. Yeah, the how-to cartoons that were almost like Tex Avery's House of Tomorrow series.
Yep.
It was like, oh, what was the character? It was like an offshoot character of Goofy, where it was like, I can't remember the name of what they would call him for those, but it was like where Goofy was like a straight man. And it was kind of weird, but it was like really funny too. There was like the one where he like, whenever he gets behind the wheel, he turns into like this Jekyll and Hyde character.
I'm thinking of Mickey's alter personality. That's not no. I was thinking of Mortimer Mouse.
Oh, jeez.
Jeez. Voiced by John Lovitz, the only person that could bring Mortimer Mouse to life. for me, favorite core character, as a kid, it was always Chip and Dale. I always loved those guys. My favorite Disney cartoon is Mickey's, what's it called? It's Mickey's Christmas Tree, or Mickey Gets a Christmas Tree. It's where Pluto faces off with the chipmunks and is there in the tree. I really liked that one. I thought that was really, really
That's
cool.
That's the one where Mickey almost turns kind of heelish because he gets very verbally abusive with Pluto. He's like, Pluto, you doggone mutt!
Yep. Yep. So awesome. I would have to look that up to see who was voicing Mickey then, but honestly, the best voice for Mickey for me was Wayne Allwine.
Yeah.
Or Allwine.
He died not too long ago, right?
Yeah. I believe I heard an interview with Rob Paulsen. He did an interview with April Winchell, and she said that one day that she had walked into the studio and Wayne and Russi Taylor was sitting on his lap, and she was like, oh, okay, that's how it's going to be in this studio. She didn't realize that they were actually married.
Yeah.
But I think that's really nice and sweet that, you know, you can, you know, go to work with your significant other and, you know, you're basically playing the characters that not necessarily probably I have no idea what Wayne and Russi's personal life was like, but it just seemed like they put all of their love into those characters.
There's so many jokes I can make there, but I'm not going to.
Stop it. just stop it. Walt was a visionary. He was, he was the guy that brought us Mary Poppins. Have you seen that Tom Hanks movie?
I have not. I
haven't either. Mary Poppins isn't something that I really cared for as a kid. I know that's blasphemy to say, but...
I don't know. I think people have kind of soured on Mary Poppins in recent years, especially the very bad British accent of Dick Van Dyke.
Oh, wow. That's funny. Overall, Walt Disney did have an amazing career while he was alive. He created the stepping stones for everyone else that has come since then. There are several movies up to the late 90s that I really love by Disney. There's only really right now probably one that I really love and another one that I like. I love Wreck-It Ralph. I really do. It's not because of the video game homages either. It's because of the story that the movie tells.
Right.
The video game homages are just like bonus points. And I really did like... I've never liked Rapunzel. Like, I've never liked that whole tale. Never liked it until Tangled, honestly. And Tangled isn't... Like, if I was going to make my top 20 Disney film list, Tangled would probably be, like, somewhere around 11 or 12. I mean, it's not my favorite Disney film of all time. That would probably... If I really had to choose, it would probably be either... It'd be a tie between Robin Hood, Aladdin, and The Lion King, honestly, for me. What about you?
My favorite is probably... I'm going to go with Sleeping Beauty. It's like Snow White done correctly. It's like hero gets a lot more screen time. The villain is really scary. Probably the scariest Disney villain ever.
Yeah, Maleficent. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I still have yet to see... I've seen the previews for it, but I still have yet to see the Angelina Jolie version. The new film. I just thought that... Like, any time she pops up in any kind of character thing, I always think, oh, wow, that's perfect casting for her. I always thought, and I know this won't happen because I know in House of Mouse she actually put him in his place, but after seeing the Aladdin films... I always thought Maleficent and Jafar should have children because they're the two evilest people in the Disney universe. All right, so I know this was kind of a short one, ladies and gentlemen. We honestly thought, and we did do research into this, we did look it up. We honestly thought that Disney himself directed a lot more films than he did. It turns out that he produced a lot more of them than he did. I believe I looked it up. I think it was on the Turner Classic Movies website where it lists him directing a total of 10 films that have, honestly, I don't think anything to do with Disney, with Disney animation. But, you know, he took a chance on Snow White. And even though I don't like the plot of the film, that kind of paved the way for what we've gotten since. I'm sure if it hadn't been Snow White, it would have been something else and whatever else.
Oh, yeah. That was going to happen sooner or later anyway. So, well, one last thing we can say. Well, I actually have two points.
Go ahead. Today,
but one thing is that he created Oswald the Lucky Rabbit. And for years, Oswald was the property of Universal because Disney, there was some pay dispute. Disney had to leave, but he couldn't take Oswald with him. And just a few years ago, Disney got all Oswald back. They traded, some sports announcer. He said he's going to be a trivia question one day. I already forgot your name, dude, so sorry. they recently got him back. So the circle is complete now. So Oswald's back at Disney. So that's cool. One little cross. Oh, you were going to say something?
Well, I was going to say, yeah, I kind of remember Oswald coming back because he was in Epic Mickey 2, the video game.
Yeah, and he made a cameo. They did a Disney short recently that was in the style of one of the old, really, really old Disney silent Mickey cartoons, and he makes a cameo in there. And it's very quick. You'll almost miss it. And then we mentioned Who Framed Roger Rabbit. Earlier, and that was kind of cool because it's the first time, and I believe still the only time that Mickey and Bugs have ever appeared on the screen together, and that was a really special thing. But there was one other time that Disney and Warner Brothers didn't really cross paths, but they kind of had their hand in the same thing. Back during World War II, the U.S. government commissioned. Looking to commission a series of cartoons for the troops to watch, you know, like instructional videos, like what not to do. And they came up with this character, Private Snafu. Originally, it was going to be Disney, but I guess Roy kind of was asking just a little too much, and they passed, and they gave it to Schlesinger, who immediately put all of his goons on it, and that's why. Have you ever watched those cartoons? They're very, very Looney Tunes-esque.
Yes, yes.
They are great cartoons. A little racist, but they're good cartoons.
Yeah, that's something that's going to come up here in the spotlight, ladies and gentlemen. Everyone says, and I believe on the Golden Collection DVDs, I think on Volume 3, actually, I don't know. I mean, I kind of know why in the back of my mind, but they have Whoopi Goldberg introducing them. and they always say that the classic Looney Tunes cartoons have a lot of blackface jokes in them and everything else. And honestly, I've seen a lot of them. I actually used to have all six of the Looney Tunes Golden Collection DVD sets, and I guess I'm just missing it. I don't know.
Well, there were... in the process of researching it, I did come across the fabled 11 censored Looney Tunes cartoons that are really bad. And then, like, the rest of them, there aren't really a lot of blackface jokes in them. Like, there are a couple that still squeak through, but they're censored in what they show on TV today.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, you know, I never thought it was racist if you know, Daffy Duck turned the tables on Elmer Fudd and shot him in the face, and his face turned black because of the gunpowder, because it got shot in the face.
Yeah, that's the one thing I know that doesn't really excuse it, but like when we were kids, we didn't get that. We're just like, oh, it's a gunpowder gag, you know. We didn't really have context for vaudeville and burlesque sketches.
Yeah, no, not at all. All right, so coming up next on Tooncast Beyond, we're going to be doing Bob Clampett. That's going to be a very trippy episode.
Because Bob is the most controversial of the five major directors at Warner Brothers.
Yeah.
Really controversial. And what a surprise, he's John Chris Lucy's favorite director, and he's just like him.
That's kind of sad. Because John Kay is no friend of mine. So that's going to do it for this Tooncast Beyond animation direction. I will be putting the contact information and all that good stuff in a separate clip. We will be back after this.
The greatest of sporting spectacles, watching the big game.
Hey! Down in front.
On these glorious occasions, there is no greater love than that between the average man and his television. Modern sports fans, however, can fully immerse themselves in game day with a new home theater system.
Gorge.
A convenient trip to the neighborhood electronics boutique will fulfill all the average consumer's needs. Here lies a high-tech wonderland where audio-video dreams come true. The heavenly journey begins with a few key components. The DVD, the CD, the LD, the DVR, the VCR, audio receiver, AV cables, TV table, satellite dish with satellite, the Blu-ray, the Green-ray, the Hoo-ray, the Hi-Fi IY, HDMI, the heebie-jeebies, and E equals MC squared. Oh, and don't forget the batteries. They're not included. Selecting the proper television is of utmost importance, and there are many models from which to choose. A conservatively sized unit is the most prudent selection. I love you. Let's move on, shall we, to delivery day. Right on time. As the friendly drivers delicately deliver the electronics with their usual professional precision, one should take great care in unpacking the fragile components. Items can shift slightly during shipping. The enclosed instruction manuals are of great assistance to the average man. Be sure to read all the provided literature. Perfect! And now, the marvel of the most modern home... Oh, for Pete's sake! Look at the time! Huh? The big game's starting! At last, installation is complete!
Thank you for listening to Tooncast Beyond's Animation Direction Spotlight. There's always get in contact with us, leave feedback for the show. Visit the website geekcastradio.com, which is all new and shiny. You can comment on our posts there. Leave the show's feedback in iTunes. Please do this. Follow us on Twitter at Tooncast Beyond is the show Twitter, at Geekcast Radio is the network Twitter. Mine is TFG and Mike. What is your Twitter?
Neil Sava.
Become a fan on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/Geekcast or Radio Network. You can also check out DeCian over there. Is it still DeCian-comic or is it just DeCian?
Are we talking about
the Facebook, yeah.
Yeah, it's DeCian comic.
Okay. Call the voicemail line. Tell us the show you're leaving the message for and your name. 502-526-5821. There is a 10-minute time limit. We hope you enjoyed this episode of Tooncast Beyond. Wish you'll join us next time, as we will be continuing the animation direction with, as I said before, Bob Clampett. For now, I am TFG1 Mike with...
TV's Mr. Neil.
Thank you for listening. Until next time.
Smiley, your musical philosopher, will talk to you on self-control. Here he is.
Oh, child, do your stuff.
Hello, 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 my friend. Today we conquer anger with a smile. Have you ever lost your temper? Have you?
Oh, me? Oh, no.
Well, you can control that temper, my friend. It's very simple. Here's the secret. Listen. When anger rises in your soul, laugh and count to 10. Self-control should be your goal. Laugh and count to 10. Now, isn't that a wonderful philosophy? Eh?
Good stuff. Good stuff. I'm
Always remember to count 10 when your anger rises. Listen to this happy little tune. When you're tangled up in trouble, don't fret the livelong day. For trouble's just a bubble, just laugh your cares away. And now, for instance, take the birdies, our little feathered friends. They never lose their tempers, and don't we love them all? And now let us sing like the birdies do. Tweet, 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 the birds sing merrily. Tweet, 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 they're happy as can be. And remember, always ignore petty trifles, won't you?
Yeah, that's right. I'll just ignore him. Sure, I'll just ignore him. Yeah, that's the petty trifle.
Waffles.